Parshas Noach tells the tragic story of moral disaster and the punishment where God decides to destroy the entire world. It's arguably the greatest tragedy in world history. And verse after verse, page after page, it's a tragic, sad, depressing story. The very end of the parsha gets much less press, less studied, less time, partially because it's the very end of the parsha, but also just because it's a less popular story. And that's the story that happened in the generation of the dispersion, the Dor HaFlaga. What happened there? The world got up and decided to build it. The world community decided to get up and build a tower in order to attack God. Rashi at the end of the parsha quotes the Medrash asking a powerful question. V'chi ezu kasha. Which one was worse? Which group was worse? Which sin was worse? Let's compare these two stories, says Rashi, the main stories in our parsha. Right, the most central one, which is the story of the flood, and the story of the Dor HaFlaga. Which one was worse? What do you think, says Rashi? The story of the flood, people were dishonest, people were immoral, people were violent, people were rude to each other. Okay, and the story of the tower? The whole world got together and they tried to destroy God, to obliterate God. Which is a greater sin? To destroy, to beat up other people and to steal their money and to be immoral, or to try to erase God's name from this world? Which is worse? Says the Medrash, it's kind of a no-brainer. Obviously, destroy God, erase God's name from this world, right? Literally to climb up to heaven and start a fight with Him. That's worse. Well, if that's true, look at the difference in punishment. The people who tried to hurt each other or steal each other's money, right? and were immoral, God drowned them, decimated them, literally, he erased them. Right? They all got killed. And what happened to the generation of the tower in a very subtle, mysterious story? What happened to that? Well, God, he took them and he changed their language. Whoa. He dispersed them. Whoa. What a punishment. Could you imagine? Hey, did you hear what happened to Johnny? Well, what happened? You didn't hear what happened to him? No, what happened? Like, well, suddenly he only spoke French. We're like, hey, Johnny, can you please pass the screwdriver? And he's like, oh, Johnny, we need a hammer. Can you pass the hammer? Johnny. The hammer, Johnny, the cement, Johnny, cement. Oh my gosh, did you hear what happened to him? He's not Johnny, he doesn't even answer to Johnny. His name is Jacques. Oh my gosh, what a tragedy. Wow, I can't believe it. What did he do? What do you think his sin was? Is that the punishment? Is that the great? That's such a great punishment. They were all gathered in one place, and then suddenly they were moved to different areas. The Medrash is so troubled. Why is it that someone who did something so severe gets almost a very minor punishment? I mean, nothing happened to them, barely. And the people who stole each other's money and were immoral, God destroyed them and obliterated them. Rashi tells us. A beautiful, eloquent language in Rashi, from Chazal. Are you guys learning by some Ariva Beinayim? In Dar HaMabul, they hated one another. They didn't get along with one another. Ve'elu, but in the Dar HaFlaga, hayu noagim ava v'reus b'neihem. They treated each other with friendship. They were friends. They were companions. They loved each other. They loved each other. Lashon Rav Rashi. They loved each other. They loved one another. They were varim achadim. Therefore, God said, wow, people love each other. There's nothing more. There's nothing more beautiful. There's nothing more inspiring. There's nothing more. There's no greater achievement. There's not greater spiritual accomplishment than loving one another. If you love one another, God says, you're doing the best thing in the world. How could I punish you? And if I'm going to punish you, it's going to be minimal. And even if their sin was worse, their sin was way worse. They tried to destroy God. They set out to destroy God. But so what? Because they loved, they got along with each other. Because they got along with one another, therefore, God says, you're greater than the people who stole from each other and were violent from one another. Finishes the Medrash, and Rashi quotes it, Lamata, we learn from this, Shesanoi ha-machlokes ve-gadol ha-shalom. Hated. God hates arguments, hates machlokes. Ve-gadol ha-shalom. Look how great the value of peace and a peaceful society is. Take a look at what happened. Take a look at what happened this week. Right? The Hamas community got together. They got together in order to kill. They got together in order to kill. And the Jewish people got together in order to love, to save lives, in order to do kindness. Oh, right? It's kind of like, who's more evil? Obviously, Hamas is more evil. But the fact that the Hamas could get their act together and work, one could argue, right? Of course they're going to be punished, but that itself is an accomplishment, right? To get along, and the Jewish people were also getting along, right? But what I'd like to read to you is a letter that someone wrote me this week, which swings the balance for us in a negative way. And this is what he wrote. Thank you, and a plea for forgiveness to my 1,300 holy brothers and sisters who were murdered, slaughtered, and burned just because you were a Jew sitting at home. Firstly, I want to thank you. This past week, the Jewish people merited to live as Jews should live, in unity, understanding, sensitivity, and solidarity. We helped each other, supported each other, wept together, hugged each other, escorted and comforted one another, and prayed with each other. We saw brothers and sisters fight voluntarily and risk their lives to save whatever could be saved. I heard of Jews who cleaned their kitchens so that they would cook kosher food for their brothers and sisters fighting on the front lines. I heard that Jews in the diaspora paid hundreds of thousands of dollars to purchase plane tickets for their brothers and sisters to get back home to Israel. I saw photos of Jews packing and delivering everything, from helmets to underwear, to our brave soldiers. Heartfelt prayers have been offered in every home and in every community in so many countries. Last night, when Jewish women lit candles for Shabbat, I lit a candle in memory of you, and in thanks, an entire week, including Shabbat, it has been a Jewish paradise in the heart of a week of hell. And now, it's time for an apology. I am so sorry that you had to sacrifice your lives for this great unity and peace. I apologize for not trying hard enough to fix things before the great tragedy, to bring love before it was too late. I'm so sorry that everything has happened since you were sacrificed did not happen before you were sacrificed. Maybe it could have been avoided. I'm sorry for the useless and sometimes poisonous speech, for the rift that has developed between myself and other people. I'm so sorry for the baseless hatred that has now exacted such a heavy price. I am personally responsible. And my mouth that speaks negatively so easily and so carelessly now finds no words with which to beg forgiveness. A much more fervent plea I ask from your families and friends who knew you so well before the catastrophe. They're the ones who are truly in pain. Some say that your souls have been ascended to a much higher place and that you no longer feel pain and sorrow. And on the contrary, it is possible that you're smiling with pride at some of what you have seen over the last week. If so, I'm slightly comforted. But your parents, your children, and friends, among whom I'm now numbered, we carry a pain too heavy to bear. We will carry it forever. I am guilty. Please, I beg of you, find it in your hearts, a small place to forgive. I promise to begin fixing. Maybe too little too late, but still. Finally, to those who I dare not even ask forgiveness, to my brothers and sisters in captivity, and to your families, from who now live, I hope, in the heart of hell, so that we could benefit from this past week of Jewish paradise. I have not the audacity to ask forgiveness. I don't have the chutzpah to ask forgiveness. Alas, it's not over. I'm supposed to continue my daily routine while you are tortured in a way that Satan himself cannot imagine. Of what use is my apology? Would it help unite your shattered family? I can only send you this letter because I cannot look you in the eye. I can only promise one thing. I promise to try with all my might to continue living with all our brothers and sisters in peace and in unity, even when there are differences of opinion. It kills me to know that you continue to suffer just to remind me that my task is not yet complete. So long as you are in captivity, I promise to try and embrace, if I become a bit wiser, and if I merit, I will continue to embrace even after you are returned in peace. So what can one Jew do? I don't know. But I know that I was part of the problem. If I created it, maybe my attempts to fix it will be worth something as well. I take upon myself to reunite the shattered family of Israel with love, in memory, and with thanks, begging your forgiveness and pledging the little I can. Love, a fellow Jew. And here are these beautiful sentiments describing the lack of unity in the Jewish people. We all know that the greatest troubles in the world today, the reason why we're in Gullis and the reason why we have no temple is because we have a lack of unity. Have a lack of unity. Let us continue, as this letter writer expresses, let us continue like we have over the last week and two weeks almost, to achieve unity in order to bring our babies home, to bring our bubbies home, to bring our boys home, to bring our families, our captives home, and to bring Mashiach home. And may we see that day soon. Shabbat Shalom.